Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And today, we're talking to the brand new member of the All Elite roster. William Regal is here. Yes, the legendary William Regal made his surprise AEW debut at Revolution last weekend after the Bryan Danielson, John Moxley war. And I've got Regal here today on Talk is Jericho. We're going to talk all about his surprise appearance and signing to AEW and how that all happened. We were going to talk about his 22 years at WWE, all the work he did for NXT, talent relations and development and everything he did. But the conversation took a turn, a very serious turn, as it sometimes does as Talk is Jericho. And while we did talk about some of the stuff he's done for NXT, especially over the last few years, and his thoughts on being in AEW, we mostly talked about William Regal's recent near-death experience, his emergency open-heart surgery, his surprise neck surgery, his surprise back surgery. It's been a hard few years for William Regal, one of my oldest friends in the wrestling business. And in this very emotional conversation, he walks us through his health issues and scares and explains how he persevered through it all and not only survived, but thrived. And he was so candid in sharing his incredible and inspiring story that we didn't have time to talk about all the other things we had planned. So we're going to have him back on very soon to get some of these stories that that we were planning on talking about. But trust me, this is very, very, very emotional. Regal, I think he burst into tears about three times. A lot of information that I didn't know. I don't think anybody really knew just how bad his health was over the last few years and how many things he went through. Things I've never even heard of before. So get ready for this riveting and emotional Talk is Jericho with one of my oldest friends in wrestling, William Regal, right here, right now on Talk is Jericho. Okay, so one of the biggest surprises of on Revolution, which was a night of many surprises, was the debut of William Regal to AEW, which was a huge, not shock for me, because I had just spoken to Danielson about you days before, and he kind of was like, yeah, we have something in mind, and then here you are. So it was a big surprise. Was this something that you've been thinking about and talking about for a while, or was it kind of a shock for you as too?
Very much a shock for me, and by the way, hello, Nuddy.
Hello. It's good to see you, man.
Yes.
Before we even get into it, the moment that I saw you, it's like, gosh, I've known you since 1996, man. And, you know, unfortunately, the way things have gone, there's not a lot of us that that are left. So it's always
not, no.
It's always good to see you from all those years.
We were supposed to hook up on the first day you arrived, right? And that didn't work out, but we hooked up at the building.
That is the truth. Chris Benoit had said Regal's going to pick you up at the airport or something along those lines, or he's going to meet you somewhere, and we just didn't connect. But you were the first guy, or one of the first guys I actually saw at the building, at the arena.
That led to a lot of things, but I always, because I, as same as you, traveled the world a lot.
Right.
If I heard there was any, especially, can you use the term foreigner anymore? Is that
I think that's okay.
Right.
Foreigners, all right.
I know what that's like to have got. I spent a lot of time from being 20 to 24, which is 4 years goes by like that now. But at that time, it was a lot of time traveling. Yes. I went to 19 countries in that amount of time. And I know what it's like to be a foreigner abroad. And so when I, you know, anybody coming in, like all the Lucha guys, anybody, I would always make sure that they were okay and did you need anything and let me, you know, help you out and whatever. And I heard you coming in and I'd heard about you and they, like, certain people tell me, oh, you know, he's okay, so I'm going to go and look out for you. If I'd have known then that you were an American, I wouldn't have bothered. I always thought you were Canadian. I was trying to help out.
You would have helped me halfway.
Slipped back into my old self there. No, but that's how it started, isn't it? Whatever your first day was, we were there.
That's right.
You'll know, because you're smart. And by the way, congratulations that you're smart. And I tell everybody to do this now, because I come from a different time when it was... used to have a saying in England that once you got in the wrestling, it was very difficult. Don't be a punter. Punter.
Explain what a punter is.
Punter isn't a bad thing. A punter is a fan. It's not a derogatory term. It's just everybody's a punter in England for something. You're a punter if whatever you like. You're a punter for it. But they used to say like I've never ever used the term mark. I hate that term. I think it's a nasty, horrible, derogatory term to call somebody who's willing to give you their time. Mm-hmm. That money and whatever with this job, what you should think about is people are willing to give you their precious time to watch you.
Interesting way to think of it.
Watch you do your thing. You should never look down on them. Because if you do, you'll stay at that level, I think. You won't try to better your craft. I think you get to a certain point. What's it matter? It's only... You play, right? Or you've been to 1,000 concerts, and I did when I was younger, and some of the same bands we went to still, right? And they're still about.
Yeah.
But would you like to spend your hard-earned money to go to see a band thinking that they were looking down on you, thinking, look at these idiots? Mm. Well, that's what a mark is. And so when wrestlers talk like that, I've never talked like that, because... And I'm the only... Well, me and Robbie Brooks are the only... real carnival wrestlers left in this industry. We're not obviously no longer doing this, but we're still in it. But I've never talked like that with that nonsense way of thinking, and I think it holds people back on being open-minded to do things differently, or the way you look at your audience.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's what's kept me around, because I've never had that silly notion.
You got to respect your audience.
Yes, every one of them. It doesn't matter how many there are. So anyway, but there used to be a saying in England, all the wrestlers, when you were, you know, I was a teenager, don't be a punter. So if they'd have found me writing down the smart thing like you did, is write down, which I tell people to do now, write down everywhere you go, every experience you have, and every match you have, because one day that's all you'll have.
Mm-hmm.
And you did it, and you were from just whatever amount of years after me. Like, I started full time in 84.
Mm-hmm.
So you was what?
I was 90.
90. So big change by then, really, by the late 80s, things were changing in England. Like, it was very, very different business by the early 90s in England. It was starting to change, it was don't be a punter. And so you get out that. In my house, I don't have one single thing that you would know I was a wrestler.
Nothing on the wall.
There's nothing on the walls. There's no, I don't own any.
Mm.
And now I go, well, that's all I've really got. Not that I want it, because my wife wouldn't have it, because she puts me in my place,
But I remember Bad News Allen, when somebody's picture was in a wrestling magazine, and this is early 90s, 90, 91. The attitude was still around where it's like, are you looking at yourself, looking at a picture in a wrestling magazine? You know, the only people that look at pictures in a wrestling magazine are marks, or a derogatory term that we are no longer allowed to say about somebody's sexual orientation. Which one are you? And I remember just thinking, like, I thought it was cool that it was my first picture I've ever had in the magazine. I wasn't flaunting it, but I happened to have it in my bag, you know? So that was kind of the mindset at that point in time, like you said, where if you collected anything, you were almost a mark, you know, the word we just said we don't want to use, but you were a mark or a punter within the business itself, which was the worst thing you could be accused of.
Yes. Well, when I heard you'd done that, I haven't looked at it, but I should do, but the world's been a bit mad the last few years when it came out, right? I never got around to, I haven't been to the bookstore for forever. But that was really smart that you did that and take note. And I think Lance always did that. And, you know,
The only guy I know that has done this, apparently Frankie Kazarian did it.
Good.
is doing it. I think Tommy Dreamer said he started at some point, but then forgot or whatever. But the only person that I know for sure from day one until now is me.
Wow.
So, and that's why I decided to put the book out, because it is. I remember when I asked Keith Hart, first day of wrestling school, he was taking questions, and I said, how many matches have you had? He said, that's a kind of a dumb question. Nobody knows that. And I was like, how would nobody know that? If I want to see how many games Wayne Gretzky's played, I'll exactly. go to a library at yeah. the time, library, and look it up. So I might only have one match or no matches or 10,000 matches or anything in between, but I would like to know at least my, mm-hmm. you know, game schedule.
So what was, I had like a 4,000 figure. So what
it
was
wasn't
it
4,000, it was 2,700. Oh, 2, and I think it's probably close to 2,800 now.
Okay, so I worked out in 30 years, not in the first year, I can't really count, although it is 39 years, on June the 4th will be 39 years since I had my first, whatever you call it.
Match.
Yeah, but I was 15. So let's say when I was 16. But we used to work ridiculous amount of shows in a week in the summer seasons in England. And the company that I work for, Worldwide Wrestling Promotions of Blackpool, every show that we did in the summer, there was an afternoon show and a night show, but every show was a singles match and then an hour break and then the same four guys in the tag. So at least two shows. So every day, four shows.
Four matches
every day.
Two matches per show, two shows per show.
At a minimum, sometimes three. Which that was 5 days a week for 20 weeks.
Wow.
Summer seasons. And I still, obviously things have changed, but there's people here like, I'm sorry, I can't remember his name now, but Daniel Wheeler.
Daniel Garcia?
FDR.
Cash Wheeler.
Cash. So I think he was the last person that I sent over there. You know, like Edge had asked me to sort of take him under my wing a bit. And so I sent him over there. I sent Daniel Bryan over there when, but by then it was down to 6 week seasons. Mm-hmm. 6 weeks just is when the children are on holiday in for summer holidays. It used to be 20 week seasons.
And these are holiday camps, holiday which is camps, basically yeah. a big area where families go to, a bunch of different activities. Wrestling is one of them.
And because it rains all the time,
yeah.
you're pretty much guaranteed a family, which is a great place to learn a family audience of a load of children and a load of, and children will tell you very quickly if you're doing the right thing or not, which is a good place to learn. But there were great places to go and just get reps and loads of reps. Yeah. Mm.
We were talking about how you weren't really thinking about coming to AEW or getting back into the business at all.
Once I was released, I went home 2 weeks before Christmas. The reason being, which might get to, the last time my family were all together was 2018 for Christmas. And I was in hospital for 8 weeks. And I insisted, I was given at one point 24 hours to live. I had sepsis in my leg. They were going to cut my leg off.
I had no idea.
This is January the 4th, 2019.
Unbelievable.
So I insisted on going home for Christmas because I've been through a lot.
Yeah.
I had a hell of a year, 2018. Keep me on track here, Nod, because you've got a better memory than me. Oh. Sorry. It's a bit... I usually just tell people, but now I'm sat with you and I'm comfortable. It's like it's like things hit you a little bit, right? Mm. 2018, I'd had a lot of heart trouble different times, and they keep, you know, and since 1998, I got pericarditis, and pericarditis is a inflammation of the sac around your heart, and what it does is scar that sac, so your heart can beat but that sac can sort of lock down. Mm-hmm. But because I was always, you know, I always might not have looked like it that I trained as hard as I did, but I always did all the squat, always breathing, taking, you know, bumps in wrestling, it kept that from locking down and going solid. The skin, there's a skin around your heart, pericardium. Well, then I went to India, got really sick. No, remember still that? Nobody knows what.
Yeah, we were all over there together.
I was
yeah.
off for a year, yeah. right? I came back and a few months later, it hit me really bad, and I was off for a year. That's another story. And so I'd had bouts on and off, right? At the same time, now I know that I'd been wrestling with a broken neck since 1993.
What?
Yes.
Through your whole rest of your career?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
From the first year I came to America, there's a match that I had when... I know this sounds like I'm saying... The first time I won the WCW television title, I had... I was on my... Unbelievable. I was on my Ricky Steamboat, and I'm 25 years old, and you can actually watch this. The finish is me giving him a German suplex, and if you watch, you know I can fall into a bridge. I land, and you can see it clear as day if you watch this right now. And you see my neck, my head hits, and my neck just goes to the side, and it went crack. And all my arms went dead. And it was never right after that. It was never right. But it sort of got better. It went away. And what I used to get a lot was all this spasming in my left trap. And my neck would get stiff. But because I know I always bridged and did all that stuff, mm-hmm. right? Go, blah, 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 blah. Well, this, I'm going off in different ways.
No, but all of these things lead to
this.
Yes.
So I ended up having my neck done in 2004. That was the end of my wrestling career. Was eventually 2013. I wasn't wrestling that much. I was winding down, doing a lot of commentary, whatever I was doing with NXT, which was all great. And I knew my time, you know, I was beat up. You do a full time, because I've worked it out of, if you take away the last few years of my career, take away the, when I say I started the first year, so we go from 1994 to when I finished, apart from a year being out, a few times off, and I took very little time off for injuries, with some major injuries, and just never said anything.
The way it was back then.
Just didn't do it. And a couple of suspensions. I wrestled solidly, minimum of 150 days a year, minimum, for 26 years.
Wow.
But like, you were smart, because you used to take a couple of years off every now and then. When you knew, you had this thing like, you were smart because you had other, well, I don't have any interests or anything else going on. And it was always that thing that was drilled into me. I always thought, if I can just get a 20-year career, I was in Wonderland. That's why you never heard me used to moan about anything. Everybody else, I was happy being a wrestler. Oh, it was that. It was being a bricklayer. That was my life. That was what I was going to be.
That was your path.
There's no, you know, although I was lucky enough to live in a nice house in England, I'm from a very working class family. I never saw my dad out of a pair of overalls covered in cement, because he was a brick, you know, he had his own construction business. We had a nice house because he saved every penny and kept adding to it and building it on his
himself,
own time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I come from a very working class family. My life was to be a bricklayer. That was it. And I always knew that I wasn't cut out for that. So once I got into this job, and I always wanted to do this, and it was an hard thing to get. You don't want to go into all these things about, oh, back in the day. But it is the truth. You know, yeah. It was very hard. There was no such thing as a wrestling school. Yeah. You had to find a wrestler who would give you a chance to get in. And I've told that story enough, and you are probably on...
Yeah, you have, yeah.
On this show before. But I was happy being a wrestler. Every day was a bonus for me. Even if I was tired and knackered and worn out and run down.
Right.
Because my dad still probably thinks I'm going to go back and start his career. Because his company's shut. He worked till he was 82.
Yeah.
Right? And he didn't want to shut down. And he still, every time, every week I speak to him, every time I speak to him, he still regrets it. He said, I wished I could keep working. He's 87. Mm. And he would force himself to work, but he
can't do it anymore.
Circumstances right. didn't work out that way.
But all of these
things add up. So,
right.
So let's go forward. I had quite a bit of things with my neck. So they did the first, 2013, I ended up having my last match with, I'd sort of made a thing in my head. There was a few people close to me. Obviously, Brian Danielson won, and then I'd met Claudio, Cesaro along the way, him. I happened to meet John Moxley. And so by fortune, we were together at the right time and the right place. And Dusty Rhodes went, what about you two doing something together? And I was doing commentary at FCW. So we ended up having, which is a lost little thing, but we had a whole year, one whole year of a, which most people never get.
No.
We had a 1 year
program.
And if it's ever put together, there is a few little things that are put together, but it's not all of it. If you actually put that story together, it's probably the greatest thing I ever did as far as a story.
Between the four of you?
Just me and John.
Oh, just you and Mox. Oh, okay. Yeah. You mentioned Cesaro and Danielson.
I'm sorry.
Just you and Mox.
This is
gotcha.
Where you got to keep me on track.
I got it.
I've got too much stuff in it.
But like you said, though, that is a forgotten angle because yes. I totally forgot about it until you just mentioned it.
After my last real run, which was the ECW thing, which I loved, by the way, because I got to, me and you did some good stuff, little bits at times. You came on there. And I had an incredible year with Christian doing stuff. And my body was shot. And I'm 42 by then, you know, and you just, and I'm like, good, I'm at peace with it, right?
Yes.
I didn't think I'd get this far. I thought I'd get 20 years because that's what everybody's thing was at one time.
I thought
I'm going to be done, toast. I was, from day one, the promoter, Bobby Barron, who I work for, bless him, said, day one that I actually, he thought I was going to stay around, he said, let me tell you, son, you come in this job with nothing. You leave it with nothing. You're going to be crippled up. It doesn't owe you anything. And don't forget, you're always in a bent business. I mean, a crooked business, right? So I never had any...
Aspirations.
There's all these things, whatever anybody wants to think of me. I just did what I... Oh, you want to make me this? Okay. And then I just did it. And you know that, right? I can tell you that I won't say who, but there's a certain person... I used to take all these young people that were coming along 20 odd years ago, I and a lot of it because of Brian. The only reason people know me now is because of Brian, really, because such a lot of young people, how have you got time, your frame of reference to know who I am? Really?
Right.
If you're 25, how have you, if you watch wrestling all the time, how have you got to, every second there's a complete new frame of reference
That's
for
right.
you. There's so much wrestling out there and there's so... So you might have heard of my, but it's probably because you might have heard my name mentioned with this. People think it was a good thing that he came into, he trained. No, it was the best thing was him coming into my life and him wanting to pick my brain.
Mm-hmm.
And so it gave me something. But it also, all these young people that were coming in the job, they all realized, this fella will actually give us the time of day. And when everybody else used to be, I don't play cards. I don't play dominoes. I don't do pack mentality where I gossip. I just do me. I'd be out by the ring. I'd be doing my squats and my push-ups when I could. Or I always did my squats, no matter what state I was in, my shoulders and my neck or whatever. And then the extras used to come up and I used to help them. And I used to talk to them because that's what the best people you could ever have, which is fit, and Marty Jones and Terry Rudge and Pete Roberts and all these fellas from Britain, these fellas that were, and Rocco and all these people that were incredible, did for me once they knew I was sticking around.
Yeah.
Right, so I would do it for them. Doesn't matter where how you start, none of that nonsense in your head about, they're not proper, they haven't done this, they haven't paid it. No, I was a kid once and I went to the, and I said, I want to do this. Well, do that. And that's how I got in. So I'm as long as you don't upset me, or I'll give you my time as much as I can, which turned into a job later on.
Right, it was, yeah.
So, and they had to try and make up a title for me as a job. Was like, what? I said, I don't know. I just do me. I don't know. I just do me. And that's what I do. I just go around and I do a bit of whatever and I do me. And that's really all I've ever done. So going forward, there was a few people. I did a match with Brian that was, I don't know how, it was when I wasn't really wrestling. And we did a match on Superstars. We wrestled each other for 2 weeks in England, or in Europe. I couldn't believe it. I was getting 2 weeks with Brian and we went out and I tore it up every night. The night before the TV, we were in Birmingham and he gave me that drop kick in the corner, and my good knee, I tore the meniscus in it. Hmm. But I knew I was on with him the next day, and I was going to go out because I thought, this is it. You know, I know that my neck's not right. I know that, not long before that, I'd tore my pec and my other bicep, which I never got fixed because I had one torn bicep from 2000. Actually, I don't remember when it was because it was 2 weeks after 9/11 when we did that show at the, was you on that show at the Garden?
Yeah.
That we did for all the families.
Yeah.
It was the only time that I wrestled a singles match with Kurt Angle.
Oh,
wow. We were supposed to go into a program together, and that was the first match we did. And I did a thing where I just, it was outside the ring, and I used to grab somebody by the back of the trunks and the neck, and I'd throw them against the bottom rope from the outside.
So they'd spring
off and spring towards me so I could nail
them. Right.
And as I did that, the right bicep just went ping. Mm. So I got through that match, but that gave me 2 or 3 weeks off. I wouldn't get it fixed. Now I get back to work. Kurt had moved on. It's just how it goes.
That's how it goes, yeah. Life.
But then we were in, we got back from Europe at some point, and I was in a, now I could have this in a bit of the wrong order, but I was on Raw in a battle royal, and it was Cody Rhodes and Ted DiBiase, and I had to knock them both out. And I never clothesline people. You just see that I don't. And I clotheslined both of them out, and I felt just rip. My left pec just ripped, and my left bicep ripped.
Jeez. You were beat up.
So, you know, it was.
Yeah.
And let's face facts. I'm a rogue, and I've lived hard. Like for a few years in my younger days, I ate it hard. You know, 24-hour party people. You know, so and you know that, and you were around. So, yeah. And through all the, but so it puts light and a lot of miles and a lot of whatever on your body, right?
Sure it does.
So, once I tore my meniscus in my right leg, but the next night. I'm on with Brian. They were going, no, you can't wrestle. You can't wrestle. I said, no, I want to put him over because he's the person who stuck around me and listened to all my nonsense for the last and come and called me and that sent me stuff and I've sent him to places and put good words in for him and whatever else. No, I'm going to, if there's one person I want to have my last match with, it's him. So if you watch that match, you will see me walk down to the ring and then they actually played a rib on me and played my old man's music halfway down the ramp. And I'm glad because they had to help me in the building that day. I couldn't walk. Mm. And I don't like giving away wrestling. You know, I am that old fashioned things, but he did, if you watch that match, it's 17 minutes of him carrying me because I can't walk.
It's amazing, man.
He did a masterful job. He actually even wrestled and did stuff on my leg without bending it. And if you know that, and you go into that with this and watch what a masterful job he did of carrying me. And he even looked like he bent my leg around the corner post and never bent. And we came out there and I thought, and I was happy. Like I put him over. Hopefully somebody is going to pay attention to this because this lad's something special.
Yeah.
Which they already were. But it was just my little thing. That's it. I'm done now. That's it. Because I was already doing bits of commentary and that's it, I'm gone. And I came back and Mr. McMahon was there. And I never thought, he watched Superstars. And he was right there to meet us and he shook hands. And Brian walked off and he went, thank you very much. He said, that was a good old proper wrestling match. He said, that lad's going to make a good villain, isn't he? Because we were in England. People were, you know, kind of reactions I used to get. I don't know why. Okay. Well, I do know why, because I think people always knew they were in on the ride with me.
Yes.
They always knew I wasn't this, whatever I was playing, this character I used to play, this Disney villain, pantomime villain as I used to be, and we've done enough stuff that you know what that is. But this character that I used to play, or still play if I have to, and turn into it in a blink of an eye. But people used to cheer me, so they were booing him when he was doing it. So he turned it, Brian turned it up, you know, and just snarled a bit and did his thing. And Mr. Man said, he's going to make a good villain. And it's funny, I don't know if Brian even knows that. And then 2 months later, they started turning him villain, and then all the stuff with Kane. It's just funny. So I was like really happy that I've done that for him.
Yeah.
Right? And now I'm happy to go. By then it was like 28 years. I'm 8 years past myself by then. Yeah. I got the 20 years. I got the 20-year badge.
Yeah.
I didn't care about anything else. I got that. I wasn't a bricklayer for 20 years. Right? I didn't have to look at a row of bricks in front of me. I was off doing stuff, right? So, but I went, NXT started, and so I was, and we had, there was, whatever's going on, me and, I was the first person that, as far as I know, that H pulled in and said, right, I said, okay, what's your vision for this? Okay, so don't need to tell that story now.
Here with William Regal, and we were just talking about your influential role in NXT.
We did what we did, and it was a great thing for a lot of people. I'm very great success, and I'm really, I have no ill will at all for anyone. I'm really happy because it needed some kind of change because things had changed. Mm-hmm. This place had come along, and different things. So it's just it needed, and so that went on, but. For whatever reason, there came a point where I got to wrestle Cesaro. And going into that, I mean, I had to get in. I didn't look great because, again, I got withered arms by then. I knew I had a bad neck, but didn't realise how bad. Really didn't realise how bad. Once this is finished, if you care to see them, and this can be another day, I will show you the pictures of, because I've got them on my phone, of not only my heart operation, film of my heart when they opened me up, but film of my, I've got the things of my neck and how bad it was, right? There's some, good, right? I'm the only wrestler, I can tell you this, I'm the only wrestler in the world, who, as far as I know, who's got four discs fused.
Wow. Usually it's just two, right?
Two to three.
Wow.
A bad one's three, I've got four. So I had a match with Cesaro, again, somebody who I've known for a long time and think the world of, got to put him over. Right, time to go. That wasn't actually my last match because the following year, in 2014, we went to Dubai to do a tryout and Sami Zayn came with us. And at the end of it, the tryout, I went, because pretty much everybody there none of them had ever seen wrestling, pro wrestling. It's weird, right? And I did a lot of that. This is a strange thing, Nod. Most of the people that we went to see, my job, a lot of it was to fill up network content or maybes of, we may be going there or we may be, we've got, the TV's just gone on in such and such. We need somebody from there. We need somebody from there. So, and
you would go to these countries and take a look at what the locals look like. The
Canyon Seaman, who I work for and with, is a hell of a fella, a wonderful fella. And when he came on board, Triple H said, can you just look after him? And I said, right. And I said, look, let's start off on the right foot. Let me take care of the wrestling and then you just take care of everything else. You take care of the athletes and contracts and that. I don't need to know anything else. Don't tell me. I'm going to be the person who just gives myself to these people and helps them in any way. I will make the connections. I will stop people taking you for a ride. Mm. And pretty much there isn't anywhere in the world that I don't know somebody.
Yeah.
And you know that.
Right. Because
my ties go back a long way, more than most people could ever imagine. Yeah. With a lot of people. If I don't know somebody, I know somebody who knows somebody. Yeah. And I'm usually on good terms with most everybody, even little things that is still a thing that I've got, right? So we did this tryout and all these people, none of them, maybe a couple of them had actually seen the
rest of it.
You might know more than me. At the time, like when we were traveling, you did the same. There was about 20 countries in the world that had any kind of wrestling. Some of them only so many months of the year.
Yeah.
WWE Network's WWE's in 180 countries. They only know what they see off WWE. Some places we were getting people from, that these, whoever, Canyon, organize this thing, because I didn't have anything to do with athletes. I just turned up. If it was wrestlers, I was looking at everybody everywhere.
Right.
That's what I did. I studied everybody from everywhere, paid attention to everything. And then I would just turn up, whatever country, do this tryout. And at the end of this tryout, I thought, well, let's give them a flavor, because I felt a bit froggy, you know. And,
right.
And Sami Zayn was there to help, because he speaks Arabic.
Right, that's where he's...
And so he was the person I took with me, and I always got on very well with Sami, you know, from I first met him in Toronto. Mm. He came as an extra, and he hadn't got his mask on, but I knew he was, and he was with Brian. It's funny, because he was sat with Brian on the ring steps, and I went up, and I went, oh. And he said, I don't know how you know me. I said, well, that's what I do. I've always paid attention. I'm happy for younger talent who do well.
Right.
I was never that old, miserable. Nah. Yeah, I might put somebody in a place now and then if I think they're getting that above themselves. I might have done that to you a couple of times.
A few times.
Yeah, but it's not out of... No, it's just out of, like, get a grip a bit. You know, like,
you're right.
That's
absolutely
what people... I wish sometimes, once I got to a certain age, I wish people had done that to me. I needed it, but there was nobody would do it, because I think they were, you know, whatever, because I look, you know, you still look like you, and I'm an old fella now, you know, but it's just, whatever it was, I could have done with that myself, but it's not in a bad way, just like, no, you don't want to do that, you maybe do that, or, you know, I don't think there was anything like that with me and you, but, you know, there was a few people that you had to pull to one side, look, you maybe not want to do that, or never not want to do that. But I had a match with Sami. And so that was my last match.
In Dubai.
In Dubai, wow. In front of about 30 people at a tryout. And then I got back from there 2 weeks later. I come down to Florida, and my son had just broke up. Our Bailey had just broke up from school. And I brought Chris, my wife, and Bailey down with me. And we spent a couple of weeks down here. And we went to get... I'm getting ahead of myself. So after Dubai, I went to the UK, and I was on the tour doing appearances. I wasn't wrestling. So we're in Leeds, and I'm doing an appearance. I think I did one of my shows.
Mm. That's right, because you were doing your one-man shows,
yeah. And that was all that ever turned up, one man. So, hello, big draw me.
There you go.
So we go. And I was taking photographs with people, and one fella come up and, hello, how you doing? And took the photo. He walked away. And as the other person was coming up, I just flicked my hair out, spun my head to the side to flick my hair out my eyes, and my legs just went from under me. And luckily, there was a wall behind me, and I just stopped myself. Mm. And I went, oh, that was weird. And I just stood up again, nothing had happened.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, looking back now, there was plenty was happening, and I was just, well, yeah, it's going to be like this. Although I could still do 300 squats, Hindu squats, you know, sometimes I was dragging my legs about and they were swelling up. Oh, it's just because I'm a wrestler. And, you know, knowing, but also knowing I got a bad heart, but they've told me it's okay as long as I do this. And, you know, all these things building up. And so 2 weeks later, I was down in Florida. We went to Gatorland. We got out the car, and my wife, Chris, just before we went in, she just said something to me. She put her hand on my shoulder, and I fell against the car. My legs completely went from under me, and I just fell flat.
Oh my gosh.
Hit the car. And I went, oh. And I got up and I went, oh, here we go. That's a bit weird, isn't it? So I thought, when I get to NXT, I better mention something about that, because that's definitely not right. Of all the things I've gone through, that's 2 times in 2 weeks. That's not right.
You know your body too.
Yeah, and I knew I was, you know, I was. So I get back. I end up going and have MRIs. I get the disc, and I give it to the doctor there. And I'm not exaggerating when I say this, 10 minutes before I'm going out to do 3 hours of commentary, the doctor puts it into his computer. He puts it on, and this doctor was very stoic and didn't say anything. And he starts swearing. Well, I never heard him swear, this particular doctor, going, F, 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 like that. He said, are you okay? And I'm going, yeah, why? He said, are your legs okay? Hang on. Next thing, hands me the phone, Dr. Maroon in Pittsburgh. Right, I'm looking at these pictures. can you move your legs? Yeah. And I'm like, doing the river dance, like, I'm all right, and he's like, all panic, time to go. So I went and did 3 hours of commentary, come back on the phone to Doc, after 3 hours of commentary, back on the phone to Dr. Maroon, get on the plane, I can't do it till Monday, this was Thursday night, get on the plane on Sunday, bring a family member with you, do not do anything, don't sneeze, don't move, get up here straight away. Whirlwind, I'm up in Pittsburgh. I go in and he's going, I don't know what I'm looking at here, but when I am, I've only, and this is directly from Dr. Maroon, who is an incredible, I know there's been some terrible things
expert,
about
though.
Him. There's some terrible thing that movie made him look, a lot of things that weren't right. Very, very wrong, but he's been wrong about that. Expert in necks especially. He went, I've only ever seen something as bad as this before, and that person was already in a wheelchair. I don't know how you're walking. And I'm going, no. I said, I was just bridging the other day. I do a 3 minute bridge every day with my nose touching on the mat, right? That's what I keep doing, right? He's going, no, I just don't know what I'm looking at. I go up and have a surgery. So it's supposed to be an hour. They go in, it's the first one in the front. They go in, I wake up and I say to my wife, sat by the bed, and she's like, also, I said, what time? I look at the clock and it says 6 o'clock. And I went, what's that? She said, you were in there 4 hours. I went, 4 hours? And then Dr. Maroon comes in, he looks like he's run a marathon. And he went, I can't, but it's... So he starts to explain, he said, if I'd have known what it was, I'd have gone straight in the back. He said, we're going to have to eventually go right in the back. He said, but once you're out, and he's saying all these things to me, and I'm going, what?
Yeah.
I'm still trying to come out of this haze, right? So eventually I find out. They've opened me up and they've found out why my MRI looks so bad is, you can't see it on MRI. I have got a huge, big, like baseball-sized bottle of calcified jelly stuff holding my neck together. And it's been like that for after talking, probably from that match with Steamboat.
Good Lord.
Whatever exploded in my neck and has just been holding this thing together. And again, like I say, I used to get these things, things in my hands and different stuff and whatever else. So he said, once I opened up, I see this mass. So it took him 4 hours to scrape away that so he can fix it from the front. So I've got pictures where there's just screws in at the front. At first, put my neck back together. I was first time I was sleeping in 20 years. I hadn't slept since, because they had brought, remember, you remember, I never used to sleep.
No.
3 days at a time, I couldn't sleep.
You'd be pacing international flights up and down the aisleway the whole time.
I just couldn't sleep. And it was bad. You know, people, they say, I can't sleep. No, I couldn't sleep 3 days at a time, which is another story. I can go on and on with this stuff. And what they did was found out that they brought somebody in to see me when I was there. And they said, how long has this been happening? I said, well, lifestyle has, well, since I've been 16, I've been in wrestling, or I've been in nightclubs, you know. So, that doesn't help. But what they thought happened was, once I did this to my... I said, really, the end of 1993 was when I started being like this.
And that's... 20 years later.
That's what set me off taking pills. I never used to drink till I came to America.
Yeah.
Right? I never did anything. I can't say I've done a few disco biscuits before then, like, you know, original raver, you know what I mean? But that wasn't my thing, drinking and any of that stuff. Wasn't. I was just about the wrestling, right? It just wasn't my thing. I never drank, never did anything. Came to America, just whatever, you know. All of a sudden, I've got everything I want. I know that, you know, everybody's got a different goal. I mean, I didn't think it would last, but it did. And then I signed in. I've got everything I want. I was under no illusions because WCW got paid a flat rate. So I was under no illusions of going anywhere. There were certain times at the end of that first year when I'd gone in and sort of said, well, hang on, I'm actually... And other people telling me, you're quite in a position here. And then, you know, getting told... Well, we can't pay you that because we're paying other people that. And if we pay you that, we can't warrant paying them that. So I get it. That's just me. It's like, yeah, I could fight that, but I was just like, okay, mm-hmm. I get it, you know. And it was a slow build up for me of making, I get that. It was just knocked out.
No, but like you said, all of those things led to this. Like, cause if you're thinking about the neck and the issue there, yeah. like that's how Misawa died, was yes. had neck. And when he took that last bump, they basically said he was decapitated with his head still yeah. on. Yeah. His neck basically broke after.
And I you know, this is going to maybe ruffle a few feathers. I thought when that happened, this is going to smarten up this industry.
Yeah.
And still people are doing that stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry to say that.
But I did it the other day, yeah. Did it the other day. The one time. It'll never happen again.
And I'm telling you that everybody, there is other ways. You do not need to be getting dropped on your head. I'm telling you this now, if nothing else, that's the one thing more than anything with me. It's not what I can help you with. Just come up to me and ask me not what to do, and I'll save you 10 years of your career.
Yeah.
That's the greatest thing, that gift I can give you. I'll just tell you what not to do. Mm-hmm. If you want to learn how to get over and put matches together, send them to you, send mm-hmm. them to Christian, send them to other people. Go and talk to these fellas. These fellas will tell you, I just do me. I just go out and I can just react to things, mm-hmm. and because of experience and whatever, I just do me. We've talked about this on this show. If I'm on with somebody who knows how to put a finish together, it just works, because I wouldn't call anything. I just go out and it's just on instinct and whatever. It sometimes clicked and it sometimes didn't. That was me.
That's amazing.
So another year after I get the neck done, about 8 months. Oh, sorry, I started sleeping.
Right.
When they brought a person in, Dr. Maroon got some specialists to come in. They said, so when did this, like, where you couldn't sleep for 3 days and stuff? And what I used to do is not sleep for days at a time. And then when I did sleep, I would pass out exhausted, and I would wake up every hour, with my hands twisted up in a ball. And I used to just joke about it. Look, I've got T-Rex hands, like that. Mm-hmm. And then I'd straighten them out, and then I would pass out again. That was my life for all that time, nearly 20 years of doing that. And I got through. And so that's at the end of 1993. That's what started me down the path of taking things to knock me out.
Right.
To get some.
Right, of course.
Just
of course.
To shut my head off, to stop it racing. So what they explained to me was what they think, anyway. This, whatever this massive gel around my neck, every time I lay down and went to sleep, whatever was messed up in my neck, my head would turn a certain way, pinch the nerves, shoot adrenaline through my body, because it's a save your body, right? Fight or flight.
Yeah.
There we go. Boom, shot me awake.
Ah.
So after a while, it just conditioned to not want to go to sleep, because it's trying to, it's a mental thing.
Right, trying to protect your body,
my body. So that's what I was dealing with for all those years. Imagine how good I could have been if I wasn't like that.
Right? Absolutely, right?
Yeah. I mean, I did okay out of it, right? And that's what. But I'm not saying this as a woe is me. Far from it. It's just the facts, right? Nobody ever thinks I'm out for any sympathy, because I'm not.
This is just the story of all the stuff you've been through.
So we get to the 8 months later, I start not sleeping again. My neck's not right again. Dr. Maroon sends me for another thing. We've got to go in the back. That was the end of it. That was then they went in. And again, thanks to Dr. Maroon and thanks to WWE, because they paid for everything. Mm-hmm. He said to me, this is, we don't have anything to judge this against. This is 4 discs. He said, and luckily, again, this is all very great fortune for me. There is a surgeon in New York that has come up with a new kind of treatment. He said, where it's titanium and it is all flexible. Otherwise, he said, I can only do 2 rods and you are completely fused.
Right.
That's what 4 discs is. 2 rods, which is what most people would get if they got that. Very few people can still do this thing. All these, since 2000, like, 8 years later, because there's not enough people learn this technique or can afford this technique. That's where WWE comes in. They paid for this for me.
Right.
And this is ridiculous. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of pounds. They paid for this for me. Right. So he said, I can't do this, but I want to learn how. If you can not do anything for 6 weeks and not sneeze, you cannot do that, because he said, I want to be able to watch him so I can learn how to. It's going to take 6 weeks for him to be able to come and do it. So for the next 6 weeks, I'm going about my business. I go up, and then they cut the back open and put this, there's pictures floating about, but you can see this thing. But luckily,
you can move your neck, you're fine, you're great.
I can turn anyway, do anything.
Yeah.
It was a long recovery. It wasn't good, because again, this is all gonna, I know it's a long-winded, everything with me is a long-winded story, but my art was also getting,
this overworked.
This is where we go. This is, because I stopped wrestling and because I'd slowed down, this sack around my heart locked down. Basically, the scarring locked down and it started to calcify inwards. And slowly and slowly, I was having more and more things of my heart going out of rhythm and different, my legs swelling up, and it was just building up. And they were, I was going to from doctor to doctor and getting all these different things, but I just got through it. I just kept going and somehow managed to keep doing me training what I could. Again, my arms were like, I got over the surgery. Oh, here's another little bit. It's just nonstop. We went on, whenever NXT did the show in London, we were on the NXT tour. I just had the surgery. But I was insistent on going, because it was, we did Blackpool, and yeah, it was like the first NXT show in Blackpool. I couldn't believe it, you know, yeah, like in my hometown. And I wanted to see my dad before Christmas, because again, you know, these things that give you a shock. I need to see my dad. I'm over here and he's old and he's over there and I need to see him because I might not last, right? And sorry, you're becoming my therapist here.
it's riveting.
It went, I insisted. So the day before we left, I'm getting my hair cut. Something happened and I feel this pop in the back in the scar. Again, this will all tie in later with the heart, and was causing fluid to gather in my liver. My liver wasn't processing properly, which means I wasn't processing protein properly. And so the scar popped open. So I started leaking leaking spinal fluid out of a hole in the back of my neck. I've got pictures of that as well. But I insisted on, I packed it and I went on tour. And when I got there, they're like, what are you doing? The doctor's like, what are you doing? Why? I said, we're in Blackpool. And it was one of the greatest nights of my life. But also afterwards, I didn't go out or see any of my friends. I had to go back to the room because the doctor there was twice a day having to pack this thing because it was just leaking spinal fluid.
Oh my gosh.
Well, it got to a point where they just said, it's just too much. We're going in to do a takeover in London, which I'm like really excited about, but I mean, this is bad. Dr. Maroon again on the phone. I was in Nottingham with NXT. He went, right. He said, I'm going to tell you this, and there's two things that can happen to you. He said, I'm trying to think of the name of it. My mind slips me now, but it's some really serious thing, because I've got, if an infection gets in your spinal column, you're done.
Yeah.
I don't know why I can't think of the name of it, but you're done.
Well, sepsis or whatever, maybe, yeah.
Whatever it is, you're done. It's wheelchair for you. This is it. So I was like, taxi, you know, like I had to cut you. I did the Blackpool thing. I never got to see my dad, which was bothering me for the whole time. I had to fly back to Pittsburgh. Next day, they took me to Manchester, flew me back to Atlanta, straight to Pittsburgh, never went home, straight to Pittsburgh. And I had to sit for 8 days. When you have an open wound, they can't re-stitch it up. It has to heal. And with its spinal fluid leaking, the only thing they could do for me, I had to sit upright for... They put a spinal tap in the bottom of my back, and for 8 straight days I had to sit there, sat upright, couldn't lie down, so I never slept for 8 days. And every 2 hours, 24 hours a day, they were coming in and they would release the spinal fluid, the excess spinal. And when they do, what your spinal fluid does is stops any nerves touching your spinal column. So he said, you're going to be in some kind of pretty bad pain. And I was like, okay. He said, there's nothing we can give you for it because we don't know what's going to happen. You can't. So I sat there upright for 8 days with a drip in my arm and this spinal thing coming out. And then every 2 hours for eight straight, every 2 hours, opening this thing, this tap. And for 30 minutes, while this fluid drained off, me screaming because it felt like either my toes were getting chopped off, my knees were getting chopped off, my head was getting chopped in half. Every nerve in my body was getting rattled, and it was just like being stabbed, like constantly. It was serious stuff, right?
Yeah.
It was real serious stuff. So I went home at Christmas. This was right before Christmas. I went home at Christmas. I've got to go. Still with a thing coming out with two bulbs, still collecting the fluid. Oh my gosh. So I got home like 20 something of December. You know, look, I've got to go home for Christmas. Oh, no, you should stay. No, I'm going home. I insist I want to be with. Again, I don't know if I'm going to make this or not. Right, you've told me that this is whatever it is I could get here. I'm going home.
All right, let's continue the story. You were talking about the complications you had from your back and neck surgery, and you wanted to be released from the hospital to go home for Christmas.
I went home, and that healed up anyway. I'd forgot about that. And I'm really glad it's running. That's why now, whatever it is in my head, I don't hold on to anything. It's gone. And it's a good job because a lot of this stuff can...
Right,
and
this is therapeutic.
This is it. This is what's doing it for me. I just bought that. It's gone. I don't know what I'd do. I'm lucky I can do that because people hold on to grudges and stuff or go on to stuff and it affect. I just... Obviously, it affects me at some point. It is now. But it didn't. It's just me. It's a shrug my shoulders. Let's get on with it. Get the job done, right? So that happened. Anyway, it got... 2018 started. First few months, I was having all this swelling in my legs, and I go on a scouting trip to Costa Rica. Because, again, it was fun. There's all these things that we did, and Canyon, I want to just mention Canyon again, because he was such a part of my life it was a great fella. He would get these, whatever instructions, we need to do this for the network, or we need to do that. And he would organize these incredible trips. They're hard, obviously, the tryouts, but he would bring people from all these areas from all over the world and give them an incredible experience for 3 days. They would work hard in the day because, you know, to find out whether they wanted to do this and if they had any aptitude for it, but he would take them all out to eat, and you would see people from different countries who would never meet each other, and it was truly like wonderful experiences to see all these people that would never in a million years have met each other all gather in one country and literally people out of slums in India, and I mean that and not in a bad way, I mean just poor people. I've been to their houses where I've had to step over open sewers and people and bring them together and give them all a wonderful experience. And so, but also, in between that, I'm doing my thing, and it's in case we need people from South America, in case we need people from here, in case we need... So there's that going on. And then there's the UK tournament. I had 2 days, 3 days to put... I was in Australia. I get a call. Can you... you fly back. You've got to cut the... You cut the tour short. Fly back. We're announcing it in 2 days. We're announcing it at tournament this is December in Australia. We're announcing a tournament in 2 days at the O2. Can you get 16 British wrestlers in 2 days? We're going to announce this tournament and it's going to happen in January in Blackpool. And I'm like, okay, because I'd just been over there in the summer and went round for 2 weeks and saw everybody and watched everybody up close, and they'd work out and couldn't ask. I was on the phone in the car park after the show in Australia. I don't know what time it was for every 13 hours difference or something to England. I was in the car park, stood out. You'll remember there's a place in Australia where outside it's a smaller building. There's like a wooden something like the, a long wooden, and there's like a, the coach's part there, and you, office. Yeah. We were there. Well, I forget where it was.
Brisbane,
Brisbane, maybe. Yeah. And I was there on the phone, going, "Fellas, can you meet in the? I don't know really what's we're doing this thing, and can you keep it quiet?" And just, and I turned up 2 days later. Well, no, a day late, whatever it was, God knows, I don't know. But somehow I managed to get to England. I turn up at the O2. I turn up and there's 16 fellas. Well, no, there was more. There was 20 because there was some extras as well. All suited and booted, looking like real professionals. And there's a picture of them. Couldn't have been any prouder. Right, I was just like, thanks, fellas. Well, sorry, lad. You've got to hear all this stuff. Get that out of my system, but couldn't have been any prouder for being a British wrestler that these fellas all turned up and all turned up looking the business. Yeah. I mean, it just, it looked like Peaky Blinders, the lot of them were all stood there like, and I'm like, how to pull this off? And then a month later, they were in that tournament and that led to whatever. There's just these things that happened that were incredible things that we seemed to pull off with a very few amount of people. There was Canyon and Kristen Altman, who was a Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman. The things that she does. One other, at different times, Paul Fair and Cammy Levin, people who helped Canyon, and me doing the wrestlers. With that was it. That was talent relations, right? The most underfunded thing in the company, that doing so much stuff.
Doing everything, yeah.
And doing everything for everybody and trying to get all these things and create all this content, because it was all about selling the network.
Yeah.
That was it. And the cruiserweight tournament, I had, I think, I don't know what, whatever time I had to do that. Can you, right, yep, got that done. Mae Young, yep, got that done. Second one, I handed a lot of that over to Sarah Del Rey and to, God, I'm just talking to her.
Serena.
Serena.
Yeah.
I handed a lot of that and I said, just bring me in if you need me, but you take the role on this because it's your thing. You should be in charge. You know, I'm not, I don't need any thanks for anything. You take that over, right? So anyway, these are all things that are in, just along the way. So 2018, go to Costa Rica. I get off the, this is March, beginning of March, right? Ryan Katz is waiting for me down in the, he'd come on a different plane. I'd come from straight from Atlanta, 4 hour flight. I get off the plane. I'm feeling a bit dizzy, but not bad, right? And just so anybody knows, that no drinking, no anything before anybody might think
you're done with that. Years
that was, ago. Yes, yeah, that was just, this is all things in my heart, right? I go to, as soon as you come off the plane, it's like a rush of people trying to get down one escalator. You know, people just start pushing them.
Yes.
I go to, I've got my roll on, my carry on bag, and it's on wheels. And it, this is what I think happened. I just remember being at the top of the escalator. This is 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm going to watch a South American wrestling tournament for 3 days or so to try, because we might be going, we
right.
might need some
people. You need to find guys, yeah.
I just get off the plane. I'm not, feel a bit like light. I mean, you know, not quite right. I go like with the bag. It catches, all I can remember is it felt like something caught the wheel caught the, you know, the actual, the banister thing.
The escalator. Yeah.
You know, the rubber thing. And next thing I feel smash, and that's all I can remember. I fell forward. It
caught you. Oh.
I fell down the escalator. Luckily, I hit the rubber rail. It completely shattered my left eye socket.
You're kidding me. Jeez.
No, knocked me out. And luckily, Ryan Katz heard the commotion and come and found me, because I had 3 weeks of amnesia after that. I have no idea what happened. I was in hospital for a week. So I was in hospital for a week in Costa Rica. And I'd shattered my eye socket. I had 3 weeks amnesia. I lost 40% vision in my left eye, which I still haven't got. Everything's grey. I can see, but it's all grey. Right. So, head injury, you know, finally they got me back home. I was doing some pretty mental things from what unfortunately my wife had to go through, some pretty bad, no clue what I was doing.
Because you were completely amnesia.
Completely, wow. I have no recollection of the next 3 weeks, but doing some really mental things. that's we haven't got time for that, because that 3 weeks in itself is a full show of insanity. And me nearly bleeding to death at one point, losing 2 pints of blood.
Good Lord, man.
Right.
This is none of this.
Right, right. Yeah, because we haven't been around these.
No, we haven't.
Nor would I tell anybody this.
It's just we spoke and we texted a few times. We never mentioned any of this. Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to, because I'm not out for any kind of pity party or anything. It's just what happens. It's just life for me, isn't it? You know?
So I go down
this thing, boom. I get back home, 3 weeks of madness at the house, but then I come out and I have to go to all... It's weird because I'm here now, but WWE got me into... Because it was a brain injury, the Shepherd Center in Atlanta, which is the... Three top places in the world, and the Shepherd Center is one of them for brain injuries. That's the one in America. And poor people have to wait for years to get into there. They got me in there, and I felt bad about it because there was people in there that needed it, and I didn't feel like I did, but I was in there. And then they recommended I had all these treatments, and I breezed through all these treatments in 6 weeks. I had to learn how to just balance and all these things. Right. But at the same time, my legs are swelling up worse and all this stuff. And I'm just trying to walk and I'm thinking it's the head injury. I'm not sure, because I know I've got a bad heart. I've wrestled for all these years, all this stuff. And I'm like gasping for air. And anyway, eventually I come back to work. I came back for a couple of months. That year I went to Bowler. I saw a few people and, it was a great show. And I used to really enjoy going out there and watching the show. Mm-hmm. I had a wonderful job because not only did I get, it wasn't the job or whatever anybody wants to think. I got to watch a lot of really great wrestlers do the thing. I'm from a different country. I come from a different style. I went to different countries. I love different styles of wrestling. I just like wrestling. I don't care if it's what you're like. I have things that I like to see, but I don't care as long as you're putting effort in. Mm-hmm. There's no right and wrong. It's whatever works. Connecting with your audience, well, keeping the people who are paying you happy is really the number
going
one
back
thing.
To
he's
that,
getting
right?
hired. Yeah. That's the number one thing in wrestling. Yeah. Second thing is connecting with the fans. If you can connect somehow and or get paid, that's it. What you got to do, right? Somehow. The extra stuff is all whatever you want to make out of it. Right, so I went to that show, but I was stood up for. I used to do the two nights because the last night wasn't the tournament; it was the tournament final.
Yeah,
I'd seen everybody by then. And sometimes I did, sometimes I didn't. But I was struggling. I was struggling. My wife come with me because she likes L.A. She don't no interest in wrestling. She'd never been all the years I've been with her since I was 17. She never liked wrestling. She doesn't watch it. She's no interest. Mm-hmm. But she was at the hotel. We tried to walk up from the hotel in Santa Monica to the local shopping center. I couldn't even walk there. I was that out of breath. And my legs were so swollen, but grit my teeth, go to the show, stand at the back. I used to stand. I'm giving one of my tricks away here. I used to always find a spot where I could stand and look at it, eye level of the ring. Because I knew that's what the cameras would pick up. So I never went to anybody, and I don't try and push advice on people. I did, if I'm at NXT and I'm, or just trying to help, if somebody asks me for help, I'm going to help them. They might not like what they're going to hear sometimes, but I was looking at it from a TV standpoint, or trying to help get these fellas jobs or ladies, whoever it was I was watching. When I went to any independent shows, I would stand and watch. And then you can see through the tricks. And so I'd say, they'd probably come into me asking me, how can I do this? And I go, maybe you want to do this detail stuff. Yeah. Because I'm thinking of it, hard cameras will pick that up and see through your tricks. I was a big thing of not giving my tricks away. That was one thing that I can hold my hand up. I might not, there's people, incredible wrestlers, far more incredible than me and mine's, and you're one of them with an incredible mind to know when to do the right thing at the right time. But I can say it's probably me and Fit Finley are the people that know we might be the best detail wrestlers around, because you cannot see through our tricks.
I agree.
Right? That's all I can hold my hand up to. right? And I'm not, I can't go off my feet. I can't, well, you know, because I go on the top rope, I get a nosebleed. Scream, right? It's not my thing.
Heights.
But anything, I can't, I own up to it. I know what I can do and what I can't. But detail is what I do. And I, you might not like it if you ask, I'm it's only trying to help you because I'm trying to get you a help. Gig. To get you a gig, because I know that's what they're going to, if you can't fit in quickly, as a wrestler, you're expected to get there and, you know, in NXT and get on board. You're not got the, you haven't got the 2 years that an athlete's got.
Yeah.
You might have 6 months. I want you to be as ready for it as you can.
Right.
It might be not what you want to hear. It might be a shock to you as a, and take away, you can take it however you want, and I'll be, and people would come up. I would never go to anybody and think that I know what I'm telling them. But if they asked me, and a lot of times was, why are you dropping yourselves on your head, fellas? Please don't do that. Look, please, I can't express, don't keep dropping yourselves on your head. Yeah. Well, it's, and when people say, well, it's okay. No,
it's not okay.
One of these times it won't be.
Yeah, once is enough.
Once is enough. And you don't want to go through what I've gone through. Yeah. And I've just told you some of what I've got. And it's only some of what, the excruciating pain of being 8 days sat up with spinal fluid getting drained off. You don't want to go that. So, anyway, comes round quickly. A few months later, not, I don't know exactly the time frame, but November, they send me for a scan because I'm not, like, my legs are swelling, and they do a scan of my, like,
abdomen.
Yeah. And luckily, again, fortunately for me, there's a cardiologist in the room, and this lady saved my life. She went, hang on a minute, there's something above that that doesn't look right. But they couldn't scan there again because you've already been injected. This was Friday.
Yeah.
Injected with a diet. So we need to do another scan, but we can't do it now because you've just, we can only do one.
Because of the fluid. Yeah.
Fluid. Come back Monday. I go back Monday. I get a scan that I'd never had before, some type of scan. I get that. I go back Monday. Right. You have got to, I went home. Within an hour of me being in the house, my cardiologist called me going, I'm sorry. I'm going, why? He said, we should have thought of this years ago. Doesn't pick up, he's telling me all these things. It doesn't pick up on a regular scan. It doesn't, I'm going, what? He said, you've probably got less than 6 months to live. What had happened was this sac around my heart had completely calcified.
Oh my gosh.
My heart. And I can show you this picture.
Was stuck in a cage.
It looks like a goose egg. It was completely constricted. It had just grown into like a goose, solid lump of rock. I have the foot, which I can show you, where they've cut me open and he's rapping on it at the beginning, rapping on this goose egg with a scalpel, and it's going tap, tap, tap. And then 3 hours later, you can see where he's peeled it all off. You can see a completely beating heart. So that was...
Did they not think they could peel that goose egg off to say only 6 months to live, though?
When they actually opened me up, they peeled.
Oh, but they thought the damage would be so bad that you wouldn't have much more time.
If they didn't take this.
Gotcha.
Sorry,
Gotcha.
If they didn't take this off now, I would have 6 months to go.
Right.
So they had to take it off right then. It's called a pericardectomy. It's a very rare operation. There's only a few people can do that. Again, fortunately, WWE got me a doctor in Atlanta that did this for
Unbelievable.
Me. One of the few that can do this. It's a serious thing, right? So got that off me. I've got my heart beating. Now, I was 8 weeks in hospital after that. This is November the 23rd, I think. January the 4th of that. Oh, I insisted on coming out at Christmas because our Bailey was back from England, right? And it was right before he went to Japan. He was supposed to start in Japan in the April. And our Bailey come back and he was home. He was, because he was living in England, training and wrestling in England. And he come home and I went, I'm going home for Christmas. Because I, the first time in my life, I was used to shrug stuff. I thought, I'm not going to make it. I'm going to die. I was in so much, for 8 weeks they were trying, well, this is about, I think about 4 weeks in, I had fluid leaking constantly out my legs. I was swollen up like the Michelin man. I was lay on a bed for about 4.5 weeks. I had a drip in both arms. I couldn't move, literally couldn't move. I was cramping up because they were giving me diuretics to try to
get the fluid out. Yeah.
But cutting my sodium down. And I was just cramping up like from head to toe. I insisted on going home. I had to struggle out and have a nurse come in. But by New Year's Day? Well, I forget. I woke up in bed. My wife's trying to do her best and I'm insisting on staying out of hospital. But they're going, no, you got to go. I was screaming the house down. I just cramped from literally from my eyelids to my toes. And I fell out of bed and on the floor, my wife couldn't move me. I barely come in and my other son and picked me up off the floor and they got an ambulance and I was just completely cramped up, got me back in hospital. So finally I got through. And the only way I can remember it is I thought I was going to die. It was really bad. And it was January the 4th, somehow I got sepsis in my leg. Again, this is all things that happened to me. Then, and you know, I everybody's got the thing. I don't know why I think mm-hmm. I don't believe in anything, but something gets me through this stuff.
Yeah.
January the 4th, my wife gets a call 3 o'clock in the morning. This is a Sunday night. Your husband's, I think anyway, I could be getting this wrong, the dates, and it's definitely a Sunday night because it wasn't the normal doctors, weekend doctors. He's got a huge big thing of where, because I was just swollen up and all this, my legs were swollen up. He's got sepsis in his leg. We're going to cut his leg off and he's got probably 24 hours to live if we don't.
Oh my gosh.
This is another, it's like madness. The doctor who was looking after me, his wife is a doctor. She was on call. She overheard, because they're not allowed to talk to each other about cases. She overheard a conversation that there's a fella who's had a pericardectomy, which again, when I was in hospital, it was like the Elephant Man. If you ever seen that movie, yeah. They were bringing people in all the time to look at me. And I'm like cream. I'm absolutely double cream lying there. You know, all kind of, and all these doctors were coming in to stare at me because they don't see this thing, right? So she heard this and called her husband at home, woke him up and said, they're about to chop his leg off. He called them and said, inject him with this. And somehow, that's because they weren't going to do it. They were going to chop my leg
that
off.
That worked.
That worked and saved my leg. And so we kept going. So they did that. We get through, again, back to Blackpool again. You know, everything of my life comes and goes out of Blackpool, and which is good. Been wonderful town to me. I'm lying in hospital bed. Now, that when you have open heart surgery, it's pretty painful, right? And on top of all these other things, right? So there's 2 days before, I remember 2 days before the NXT UK show from Blackpool, where Walter, who is now called Guns, where he debuted. I'm in hospital and something in my brain just went click. And I thought, I'm going to be okay. I don't know what it was. Something just went, you're going to be okay. And then it was just for the next 2 weeks was me trying to get out of hospital. Because if you're in hospital, I hate to say it, as wonderful as people are, you're going to stay sick.
You need to get out.
You need to get out and get yourself healthy if you know how to. Yeah. And I got myself. So they kept me in there for a long time if I hadn't got out. Right. But after 2 weeks, I got out. And I watched the UK tournament on the bed. It was the first time I'd let Dave Taylor come to see me because he kept coming and I thought, I can't have him come.
Yeah.
I'm in so much pain and you know how much he makes you laugh.
Yeah.
Even not meaning to, just because he's moaning. And he just makes me laugh. He's either making you laugh on purpose or he's making me laugh because he's moaning.
Exactly.
I couldn't have him come because I was in so much pain with my chest and all these things going on. I didn't want him. But I felt good enough to say, why don't you come over and we can watch this. I put it on, somehow I managed to, off my iPad, put it on the screen and we watched the UK tournament and I'm texting with H as this UK tournament's going and I'm sat in the hospital in Atlanta doing this show and we're texting backwards and forwards and Dave's there and I got out a couple of weeks later and I started straight away trying to just walk down to the end of the path, and then within a very quick time I was walking 3 miles a day and within 2 months, I was doing 500 squats again.
Let's do this. This has been, honestly, this has been riveting. I've never done this before. This is a first in Talk is Jericho history. If you want to do this, why don't we wrap for now? Because
we've got to go to work. Yeah.
Why don't we get back together next week now that we've gone through this whole trial and tribulation and talk about some of the other stuff that we never got the chance to talk about? Yeah. Would you like to do that?
Yeah, if you want. Yeah.
I would love to have you. A live two-parter, because this has been. Talk about the conversation going in a different direction.
I'm going to say a different direction.
But it's been amazing, and I'm glad that you got some therapy out of it, and I'm glad that you're here. Glad that you're still with us, man. Is that cool? Should we do that?
Yeah, yeah. All right.
Amazing.